And now, coming to you nearly live from a bunker deep within the Virginia City mountains, it's the Storyteller Podcast with your host, Sam Toll. Actually, I'm coming to you today from an apartment in Midtown Sacramento. My daughter and her boyfriend are on a road trip to and through Canada and the Northwest. And so I'm here in Sacramento babysitting Frankie. So if you hear a yapping dog or a driving car, you'll know it is the warm ambiance of Sacramento that's chiming into the podcast. This week, we're going to replay the Sheriff Jerry and Friends radio program that was recorded and produced on air last Thursday. In the episode, Jerry's guests are Jim Hindle and Story County Commission candidate Nicole Bard. They're talking about a number of different things, including the VCTC, the Virginia City Tourism Commission, and the comings and goings of what's been going on there. I've got a piece that I'm going to be pushing later on today that talks about the cancellation of the Ferrari races being a galvanizing moment that banded together 30 to 40 merchants on C Street who are pretty annoyed with the way things are done in Virginia City regarding the marketing of the town, the function and role of the tourism director, Denny Dodson, the board of directors. And it's really sort of evolving into an interesting situation, which I've written about, Ms. Bard has written about, and Jerry, Jim Hindle, and Ms. Bard will talk about here shortly. It's interesting to see the political landscape in Story County having been just completely shaken up by the ouster of Jack McGuffey by Jay Carmona in the primary election and the pending choice that folks have between Mr. Carmona and Ms. Bard in November. Both candidates represent a break from the business as usual status quo that has had its stranglehold on Story County since I was a kid growing up in the late 60s and early 70s. So this is something that I predicted, that we've been working for, that we pretty much expected once Commissioner Gilman and Chris Thompson's failed effort to oust the sheriff in the recall election in April of 2017 happened. I predicted that recall election would be a pivot point where the folks who think that they own the place are going to be reminded by the folks who actually own the place that the people are in charge, and while we elect folks to represent us, once that representation starts to drift from supporting the folks and the interests of the many and start to gather around and focus on the interests of the few, that the many will replace the few in short order. We can't do that right away, but the first step of taking our county back will happen this November. And then, you know, in 2020, I fully expect that both Commissioner Marshall McBride and Commissioner Lance Gilman will have, unlike their last election where nobody stepped up, I suspect there'll be folks stepping up to challenge their position, to challenge the status quo, and to make a strong and concerted effort to take our county back. It's entirely likely that Commissioner Gilman will retire and not run again, but Mr. McBride will not. I'm sure he will vigorously defend his reelection, and I know a few folks who are anxious to step up and provide some choices for the people in Story County. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and queue up Sheriff Jerry and Friends. There's some very interesting conversation. I think that folks who are interested in the prospects of the November election and who is the more qualified candidate should listen with a keen ear to what Ms. Bard is saying and get a feel for what kind of county commissioner she might make with the background that she's got and with the level of involvement that she has demonstrated over the last 5 years. I think that if someone was to vote for her, their vote would be well placed. So without any further ado, it's the Sheriff Jerry and Friends show. This show, by the way, is being rebroadcast with permission from those folks at America Matters.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sheriff Jerry and Friends. I am Story County Sheriff Gerald Antonoro. If you would like to get involved with today's show, whether you're listening on 1180 AM, KCKQ, a Lotus radio signal, or online at americamatters.us and clicking on the Listen Live button, you can call in toll free at 844-790-TALK. That's 844-790-8255, excuse me. That's toll-free anywhere in the world. Today, my friends are Story County resident and County Commissioner candidate Nicole Bard. Nicole's background is in the business world, and I believe that it is her hope to bring some of that to our county government. Perhaps more importantly for today's show, however, is Nicole has been working with the Virginia City Merchants in their recent plight with the Virginia City Tourism Commission. We're going to get into that a little bit later in the show, so welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Jerry. Happy to be here.
We also have returning our friend, Jim Hindle. Listeners may remember that Jim is, in addition to being a Story County resident, is the chairman of the County Republican Party and vice chair of the Nevada Rural Caucus. So welcome back, Jim.
Hey, thank you. Still reveling in my independence from yesterday.
Excellent. I hope you both had a great Independence Day. We had a ton of stuff going on in V.C. The VFW had their big breakfast. We had a great parade. Awesome concert by David John and the Comstock Cowboys. And a pretty darn good fireworks display to wrap it all up last night. From a public safety perspective, we had very little issues. A couple of motorcycles fell over, but nobody really got injured. Had one horse clipped just before the parade, and fortunately, the horse and the rider, because it was a horse from the parade that got sideswiped by a car, fortunately, they were both all right.
That's
so
good.
Hopefully, they'll be back. But in my wanderings and visiting with the shopkeeps up there during the day and long towards evening when things were winding down, I heard the same thing I've been hearing for quite some time now. And some of the businesses made out like bandits. Others reported it being their worst year yet. So since we brought up the plight of the merchants and the VCTC, the Virginia City
Tourism
Commission. We've brought that up in the past. Aside, individual business practices aside, Nicole, we want to revisit some of those issues. I know you've been working with the merchants on that. What can you tell us, update us as far as what's going on with the merchants and the VCTC?
Well, the merchants had a follow-up meeting after they went to the VCTC meeting beginning of June, and we had a meeting on the 26th, and there's good news, bad news. The good news is that I think we had a very good outcome from that meeting, and I'll get into that in a moment. The bad news was that we held the meeting outdoors at the Canvas, which is a great place to meet for small groups, but we had a fairly large group of, you know, between 30 and 35 folks, and the worst part of the meeting was the wind and the noise. So given that, my role, you know, I worked with Alexia and Richard, the owners of the Canvas, who essentially, you know, started this effort in coming up with the agenda for that evening and facilitated that meeting. And it was difficult not because of the players, which is typically the thing that hampers good facilitation. In this case, it was the weather and the location. The agenda essentially was to look at both what's working and what's not working. I got to be honest, you know, folks coming to that meeting initially, you know, there was a bit of anger and a lot of, you know, a lot of things that were wrong. But, you know, once we discussed what the agenda would be and they agreed, yeah, let's talk about what works, let's talk about what's not working, and then quickly look at, so how do we get into a solution space? And, you know, as dicey as that was, they did it. what we came away with as the top three things that the merchants would like to work on with the VCTC. One is that they would like to have a representative, one of them, on that commission. There is a seat that represents the merchants held by an incumbent at this point, but they would either like to replace that seat with one of the merchants at the meetings or create another seat.
Now, let me jump in and interrupt you for just a second, because maybe I've been misunderstanding all this time, but I thought all of those seats represented some aspect of business in Story County or in Virginia City.
They do. The merchants do not feel that they are represented on board.
Now I got you.
So if there's a seat for motels, there's a seat for the hotel, there's a seat for nonprofits, there's a seat for restaurants, and there's a seat for shops. And, you know, this is not anything negative against the person that is sitting in that seat right now. It's just that they want a stronger voice, and if they can work with the person in that seat to do that, great. If they can't, and there wouldn't be no reason that that wouldn't happen, but they feel that because they are the majority by number on C Street, that two seats wouldn't be outrageous for them to have. So, you know, the top three for them was, you know, representation on that commission. The second thing, and this was big, and it came up, you know, on and on during the meeting, and that is communication. Whereas the VCTC executive director believes that he's doing a good job of communicating with the merchants, they do not. And so, you know, there's a breakdown of communication. Communication is always a big issue, whether it's a personal relationship or in any relationship. And so this is no different. It's important, but it's not a deal breaker in terms of something that can't be solved. So communication, in terms of more communication with the merchants directly, they don't all go on Facebook.
Okay, we're already jumping into our first break. So, Nicole, if you can hit point number three, 10
point
seconds.
Point number three is essentially be focused on helping the merchants increase their revenue. And that we didn't get into any detail on.
Excellent. We will pick this up on the backside of the break. We're already going to the first break. Folks, you're listening to Sheriff Jerry and Friends. Remember, you can call us anywhere in the world, toll-free, 844-790-TALK. Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Sheriff Jerry and Friends. And just before the break, Nicole Bard was telling us about some of the going-ons between the merchants and the visitor center up there in Virginia City. I want to jump back in that. We were having a little bit of conversation during the break. I know, Jim, you had a point that you wanted to make as far as perspective communications.
Well, you know me. I always have an opinion.
Well, of course. That's why I like having you on.
I think Nicole ought to finish with her three points, and then we can get into maybe a little discussion around them.
All right. Back to you, Nicole.
All right. Just to finish up on what their top three issues under, to amplify a little bit on the communications part, they, you know, in addition to having better communication, you know, with the merchants directly, they would like to see more of the promotional activities really focused on the local businesses and locals in the area. And to be fair on that, the VCTC does have what I think is an excellent video series called Under the Surface that they've produced. They've produced about, I think, five or six videos. And so I think that continuing to do that on the VCTC side would help with this particular objective from the merchants. And then a couple of them noted, you know, we still need a little bit more promotion outside of, you know, the area which it's focused on right now. And one noted that, you know, we don't seem to have anything in the airport promoting Virginia City. Now, I haven't been to the airport in a while. I haven't walked those areas, but that's these are simple things, I think, that they absolutely get worked out. So at the end of that meeting, we talked about having the next meeting where we would continue to refine this, and came up with the agenda. The next meeting is going to be on July 9th, which is coming up on Monday, 6 o'clock at the Tahoe House. And What they're going to do there is essentially go back, review what they agreed to or came up with as the top three, firm those up, and then define what the objective is for the next VCTC meeting, because it's coming up next Thursday, and they want very much to go in there with a solid, here are our top three issues, and here are some recommendations on how to work with us, and we'd like to work with you to fix those issues. In my conversations with a couple of the board members on the VCTC, they're waiting for this. They're very anxious, you know, to solve this. They want to succeed. They want the town to succeed, the commission wants to succeed, and they want the merchants to succeed. So they're looking forward to seeing and hearing what the merchants have to say at the next meeting.
Well, I think you're right on track there. I have reached out to both their executive director and some of the board members and invited them to be down here to voice a perspective. And I understand their concerns, this movement among the merchants, and I know that they have one of their commissioners that's been sitting in on these meetings and trying to open those lines of communications. They're just worried about the being at the infancy stages. They don't want anything to derail, and just if any of them are listening, just so they know, my intention is not to derail it. I think it's a pretty significant issue for our community. So my purpose in bringing it to the show and using the show as a platform for that is to help further those engagements, those lines of communications. And unfortunately, as we all see, anybody who's been involved in any kind of committees or programs, boards, things like that is one of the things that actually was brought up at the VCTC meeting that you referred to that I was at also, people lose interest. And mm-hmm. if you're not there representing your interests, then, you know, your voice goes silent, and the folks that are there are left to make decisions in a vacuum.
And they recognize that. They stopped going, they stopped going to the meetings for any number of reasons, not the least of which is that they've got businesses to run. And the meetings changed from, I think, 8 o'clock or 8:30 to 10, and they requested and were immediately approved. They requested that the meetings go back to an earlier time so that they can be there instead of at the time that their businesses are opening. So the VCTC, you know, immediately said, yeah, okay, great. You know, we can do that. So they were flexible with that. This particular group of folks are also, in addition to identifying the issues and working with the VCTC to solve them, they've recognized that they haven't done what they need to do as an organization to make sure that they're heard. I mean, it doesn't happen by osmosis that the VCTC knows and understands what the issues are. You have to have somebody there looking out for your interests, as you've said, Jerry. So the secondary thing that we're doing at the meeting on the 9th is talking about, okay, is this a one-and-done thing? Or are we wanting to form a standing group that has, an end date, but like a project group? Or are we wanting to look at forming a more formal organization with a purpose that is going to be an ongoing thing? And that's going to be a much longer conversation.
Well, and Jim, I think there's a perfect place for the point you brought up on the,
right.
the break as far as purpose and interests.
Right, and I think it's key. I mean, the thing that they're doing. Because just as Nicole talked about it, there's a vested interest in the VCTC to allow the town to thrive, bring people. Let's kind of focus on the fact that their job is to bring people into town. Their job is not to make money for the merchants, and they know that. But they need the merchants' input, and the merchants need to be organized in order to provide that input. And so what they're doing, I think, is good. But they need to recognize that the VCTC doesn't necessarily exist to promote their interests. The VCTC is there as a quasi-governmental body appointed by government, county government, and it's there to do really nothing more than to promote Virginia City. The merchants have to sell their own causes, and the more they're organized in order to leverage the VCTC for that advantage, the better off they're going to be. But if they aren't interfacing with that commission, the commission's going to do things that aren't necessarily compatible with maybe their business objectives.
Well, and those are good points, and there are points I've heard at various conversations with business owners or at VCTC meetings, but you bring up a great point that not always are they going to be thinking along the same lines. Everybody has their own objectives, but you know, back to what Nicole was saying, if we all start talking to each other, then we can, we have greater strength in numbers than everybody trying to do their own individual thing. And that, that includes the VCTC. If I know some of the vendors up there, the merchants, they have great returning customers that, you know, if they are out there promoting the town, promoting the events, you know, that might bring that customer back for more than just to make the next purchase of what they need. And at the same time, if the VCTC is dragging those people to town because of the events and the merchants play nice, you know, they're, then they're going to make their sales and earn their revenues, things like that. So, you know, everybody has their role, but it sure makes it a lot easier if everybody's playing together in a, with a unified goal of promoting the whole. I know that there's some of the businesses up there very open-minded, and you know, if I'm selling something, somebody comes into my shop and it's not something I have, you know, I refer them down the street to Nicole's shop, or they go down there and Nicole refers them over to Jim's shop. You know, there's a handful of the businesses that I know do engage in those types of business practices, and it helps everybody across the spectrum.
Right.
One of the things that they brought up, and I think that is part of the communication with the VCTC, and having somebody attend those meetings or be an additional seat on the board will get resolved. But as part of bringing these events into town, they also bring in competition, external competition to the merchants. You know, things that, I mean, the promoters of the event don't necessarily know, you know, exactly what shops there are or what those shops sell. And things can also fall through the cracks. The example I'm sure probably Alexa gave you when she was here to talk about it last time was putting an ice cream vendor in front of Grandma's Fudge that serves ice cream.
And that is a valid point that I fully side with the merchants on that. If you've got a brick-and-mortar building, you're paying the overhead, you're paying the property taxes, you know, whoever is organizing it, and maybe that falls back to the VCTC since they're the ones who permit all of this stuff, or if there is an independent promoter for a specific event, you know, they've got a responsibility to our local merchants to make sure they're not bringing in competition that is going to undercut the merchants.
Absolutely. And again, that was brought up during the meeting that they went to at the VCTC, and you know, the board, the commission was very open to listening to that. And it, you know, I go to these meetings, I've been going to these meetings for years, but I'm not a merchant. I'm watching, you know, different kinds of things, but you know, I'm not a merchant. But they, one of the things that they would like to do, and they feel they can do this through a seat on that commission, is they want to be on the selection committee for bids when they go out for vendors to coordinate the events. They want to be on the committee that plans the event so they can see what the vendors are being brought in that may compete with them. And I think that the commission welcomes that input because they've been doing it in the dark. So I think it benefits both sides here to open this conversation, and I don't think that there's going to be resistance on the part of the commission to listening and fixing some of the things that the merchants are bringing up.
Well, and that's what we can hope for, is that something good comes out of it and that the whole community benefits from it, both the tourism and the merchants. So we are getting ready to head into our next break. When we come back from the break, we're going to get into a little bit more politics. So folks, you're listening to Sheriff Jerry and Friends. We'll see you in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Sheriff Jerry and Friends. We're going to switch gears a little bit from the visitor board, and we're going to jump into a little bit more caustic politics. How's that? And my guests here today are no stranger to these things. So last week there was some breaking news that some of my detractors were endorsing gubernatorial candidate Steve Sisolak. Now, the first thing that jumps to my mind is the press release that they put out made such a huge issue about it having nothing to do with their dislike of me and wanting to unseat me from the office of sheriff, that kind of derides their own statement. You know, that whole thing, thou dost protest too loudly. You know, they spent a lot of time saying that it had nothing to do with the sheriff's race. It just had to do with how great of a guy this Sisolak was when it comes to business. So I did a little bit of looking around. So that's kind of the path that we're going to go down. So the first thing that kind of sticks me about this Sisolak guy was that he comes out with an attack ad on the Republican candidate, Adam Laxalt, and having to do with me, Adam wouldn't investigate me and lock me up and execute me at high noon, whatever the case may be, whatever it is they want done. But yet, Sisolak or no one from his campaign even bothered to contact the other side. He accepted what he was spoon-fed by these detractors. So it makes me think that maybe it's just because of the volume of accusations that these guys have made is why Sisolak came out with his statement like that. But then when I did some research, I found out that Mr. Sisolak has also had allegations made against him from a former romantic interest, and I believe it involved her child, something like that. A number of the Las Vegas media outlets were carrying this. Now, some of this has some of them have said, yeah, these allegations are false. There was no basis in them. But perhaps Mr. Sisolak can't apply his own personal experiences to somebody else who's accused of things. Or the question remains is his position based on who gives him a campaign contribution? And Jim, you're into statewide politics. Give us your thoughts.
Well, yeah, all disclosure up front, you know, I'm going to come at it from a Republican standpoint, Republican principles, and the trends of what we've been seeing. The endorsement was made ostensibly because County Commissioner Sisolak is going to be positive on business. And a perspective is that his past has been more pro-business than maybe an overall Democrat policy has been.
Okay, well, you bring up an interesting point. I hate to interrupt you, but one of the things I did before coming into today's show is, granted, he's a Democrat, and I heard a rumor that there had been some party jumping once upon a time. I don't know if he was a member of another party at one point or
I don't have
time
any
or
info
not,
on
but
that.
Yeah. Whether he's new or a practiced Democrat, I was looking at the current 274 Democratic Party platform statements this afternoon or this morning. I mean, and there's a ton of them. And so I'm sitting there reading through these, scratching my head, figuring, where is this more business friendly? You know, some of the things that I saw, and granted, this is my perspective, my take on reading those, but they have support for unions, support higher wages for employees, progressive taxation for businesses, and lots of money grabs to pay for all kinds of programs, make more excuses for bad behavior, and more government handouts to just about everybody under the sun. So what is business friendly about that?
And that's maybe this is a nice jump from what we were talking about with the VCTC, is the role of government in promoting business and the role of government in dare I say, subsidizing business, and what we have seen in terms of business development, the idea that the free market can't direct itself, but you have to have government involved to guide it and to give priority to, you know, heaven forbid we call it winners and losers of what's in vogue and what's out of vogue. And I think you look at his website and his policy statements, that's exactly what he is going to do. He's going to pick the favored industries, and he's going to provide incentives for those favored industries to develop, and he's going to penalize industries that he feels are not appropriate for Nevada's economy. Now, is that government's role, or is that the free market's role? But when we look at what he has in terms of his priorities of course, tourism, but he says we have to augment that with development of more energy outlets, and there he's talking about clean energy, which there are opportunities for Nevada, but do we subsidize that, or do we let those investments justify themselves on their economic potential? Medical research, medical companies, medical investment in medical devices. Is Nevada a natural place for those to come, and therefore we have a natural advantage, or are we going to create artificial advantages for business development in those areas? But what happens to our traditional areas of mining, manufacturing, transportation? I have not seen any mention of where those fit into these priorities for further development. So again, it comes back to what's the role of government, to pick winners and losers, or to create a level playing field so that the natural competitive companies are able to succeed.
Well, and Nicole and I have had a conversation before about government and what its roles are and how it should work, and I believe wholeheartedly that there's a lot of business practices that should be infused into government, because government is not that business friendly to begin with. Like you say, picking winners and losers, our state is known for its gaming, but I don't think government's supposed to be gaming on businesses. And Nicole, you come from the corporate world. What's your take on this?
Well, I'm going to speak as a resident. I'm not going to speak as a candidate, and I'm not going to speak politically because I'm a nonpartisan. As a resident, if you look at what's been written recently, about Tesla and the abatements, et cetera, big money has always been in Nevada, but we got new big money coming to Nevada. And it scares me watching big money come to Nevada. There's good and bad for that. The good is, of course and always, it's bringing us jobs, and that's great. And it brings us growth, and that's great. But there are downsides to unplanned development, unplanned growth, and Washoe and Sparks and our local areas are feeling that now because of the expansion from TRIC. But there have been articles recently written that, the abatements that Tesla enjoys essentially have sucked up the revenue surplus that the state had. And so if the state continues to be a net zero on having surplus revenues, they're going to have to increase taxes somewhere to pay for these abatements. As a resident, that does not make me happy. There's already bills in place to look at and raise the property tax cap.
Right.
And so as a resident, I'm sitting here going, let me see if I get this straight. Big money's coming in. Big money's making big money. Big money is getting subsidizers. Many of these companies are getting these abatements in corporate welfare. Where's that money coming from? The answer is out of my pocket. It's coming out of my property tax, which will need to be increased in order for revenues to come into the coffers of the state, then in order to attract big business.
Yeah, I read the article recently. I think it was in the LA Times. They had an article in there about these tax credits that you referred to, that Tesla is selling off to casinos.
They were supposed to go, from what I read, and initially when they came here, they were supposed to go to the companies they were bringing with them to co-locate and that were going to be in their ecosystem to help them produce, both cars and Panasonic produce batteries. I do not believe that the state essentially gave them, $150 million? Which is helping their cash flow because they're turning around and giving that or selling it to the casinos. I don't believe that was the intent of that particular grant to Tesla. Sorry.
Well, right. And there's a lot of unintended consequences with this. And I don't remember which one, Nicole or Jim, one of you made reference to corporate welfare. And, no doubt about it that the trick is great for Northern Nevada, great for our region. It's brought lots of jobs, infused lots of money into the economy through wages and whatnot. But I can't help but think, being here in Story County, that we're not collecting property taxes, we're not collecting sales taxes, but yet we're having the infrastructure costs. We have to pay the developers for what they're building. We have to provide the services. And Nicole, you attend all those county commission meetings that we have up there. We just approved a negative budget. Unless we get a handout from businesses there in the park, you know, we're going to have to go back into the budget and rearrange things, make some clips and tucks here and there. You know, it just doesn't sit well with me, both as a steward of the public money and as a resident who pays taxes there.
Yeah, one comment on that, why we're at a negative budget. Tesla got the abatements for sales tax and property taxes. So imagine, if you will, that the county's not getting any revenues from those major revenue sources. We do get, Story County does get revenue from business licenses and inspections and things like that, but that wasn't enough to cover the cost of what it costs us as a county to support Tesla. So the county entered into a services agreement with Tesla where they're paying you, Jerry, you know, you're getting an additional headcount to do additional patrols, the fire station has gotten additional money, et cetera. They did not re-up that contract this year.
And with that, we're going to leave it at hanging, come back to that after the break. Folks, you're listening to Sheriff Jerry and Friends. We'll see you in a minute. Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Sheriff Jerry and Friends. And we're going to pick up where we left off dealing with some of the revenue issues there in Story County. And just to make it perfectly clear, like I said, on a regional basis, I think this is fantastic. It's infused lots of money into our part of the state of Nevada. I'm not a huge fan of it. I don't think that Story County is making out. Nicole, you brought up some issues during the break that you wanted to circle back to. So,
yeah, I want to echo that. I mean, thank God we have TRIC in Story and in Northern Nevada. So this is not a comment on business being business friendly or not being business friendly. This is a comment on how to manage a budget, because everything costs money. And the county has to spend money to provide services out at TRI. And Tesla in particular, being the biggest fish in that pond, you know, requires services. The county deficit is at one, I think the last time I looked was at $1.7 million. 1.2 of that is what they were expecting to get as a part of that service agreement from Tesla. So that service agreement not being signed, the last thing I heard, which was on Tuesday, in Tuesday's meeting, is, you know, Tesla is going to continue to pay, but they're going to relook at the contract and try to renegotiate it in terms of the wording of it. They're going to continue to pay. But it brings us to the point that, you know, with as much success as TRI has brought to Northern Nevada, our neighbors, our county neighbors, think that we're rich. And I've looked at the numbers with the comptroller, and whereas TRI does, as a whole, not just Tesla, but the entire park, does generate a lot of revenues. It also eats up a lot of those revenues in services. And where we, as residents in Story County, when all of this started to take off, have been told by the developers, hey, this is really great. You guys are going to be swimming in money. We're looking at a property tax rollback. They declared that an analysis be done to do it. That was 4 years ago. We haven't gotten that. And in fact, the times that it's been talked about, it's been said that, yeah, well, we don't know if we can do that. I think their heart was in the right place, but they spoke quicker than they actually did the analysis on the funds. And so, you know, the perception is that Story County is just swimming in rivers of money as a result of TRIC, and we're not. We're simply not.
Right.
Not
and
yet.
One of the things that a lot of folks don't understand also is, going back to the initial agreement, those roads, the sewer lines, all of that infrastructure costs that are being put in out there, the taxpayers are reimbursing the development company for. With that, I understand we have a caller on the phone, which is none other than our friend Sam from the Storyteller. Sam, are you there?
Yeah, hey, good afternoon, Jerry. I'm calling you from sunny Sacramento, where it's about pushing 100 degrees today. I just wanted to chime in on the fact that you know, the county is really not swimming in money. I did get a report yesterday from the Nevada Department of Taxation, and Story County made history with $1.6 billion in taxable sales. in fiscal year 2016-2017, and we are at a pace to be below that by what could be as much as 20 to 25%. In analyzing the numbers, you know, a lot of the sales of construction materials, equipment, contracting, and heavy land manipulation, land use is going down. And so it may be that the boom is over out there, but, you know, the county revenues in Story County are below this year, are below what they were before Tesla got here in 2014. So, you know, things aren't as rosy as we had hoped they would be. And I'd really just love to echo what Jim Hindle said, that the government is not in the business of picking winners and losers. The free market, when left alone, is the best way to determine which company is the best for, you know, for succeeding. And the government's is the last group of folks you want picking winners and losers.
Well, ain't that the truth, Sam? And we're going to be interested to see where this takes us. Jim, I know you wanted to weigh in on this.
Well, you know, echo what Sam says. You know, it's an old economic cliche. The economists would say that money will always tend to move toward where it has its best use with its best return. And at the same time, businesses are not stupid. They know how to play the game, and they know how to game government when government starts trying to pick winners and losers. I mean, look at Amazon's second headquarters auction, if I can call it that, that's been going on. I mean, Amazon is playing local, county, and state governments like a fiddle on that, and states and county governments are giving away the farm to try and entice.
Yeah.
To entice that headquarters to come in.
I understand we have a long-running example of what we have to look forward to if that gaming continues, and that's the city of Detroit, where the auto manufacturers gamed them for many number of years.
Right, right. And I come out of the automotive steel industry, heavy equipment, heavy industry, where in the 80s and then into the 90s, that game went on, and it continues. When we look at what's happening with steel companies moving in, where, you know, counties gave away things and that the company would be there for as long as that investment made them money. And when that investment doesn't make money anymore and they've amortized the majority of that cost over sales, they're real quick to shut it down and go to the next place where they can get the next investment advantage.
Exactly, and we're running to the wire. We've got a few minutes left here. There's one other thing I wanted to touch base on before we get away from this and do the wrap-up. One of the other things that I'm sure that it's a concern to me, I'm sure there's lots of folks in the rural part of our great state who will have concerns with this, and I have seen these television commercials myself with Sisolak going on saying, hey, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to outlaw every kind of gun you can imagine, you know, and this scares me, and it should scare anybody who has a fondness for the Second Amendment, you know, and then the hypocrisy of it, because I'm reading in the paper, looking at some of this stuff, and days after the October 1 shooting, you know, he takes this big campaign contribution from a marketer of machine guns, but yet he wants to outlaw guns. So, you know, there's a goodly amount of hypocrisy involved in that, plus our constitutional right to keep and bear arms is definitely in danger in the state of Nevada, and we're on the verge of becoming what the you know, the people on the other side of the hill to the west of us are, whereas we're going to, you know, might even have to start registering your BB gun, Jim.
Right. So I'm going to make a great leap because I know we are on the short end of the stick for time, but that is the crux of what we are in this election come November through state legislative offices, state constitutional officers, and our governor's election. Do we, it sounds like I'm, hyperbolistic, but do we want to become East California? And will this governor stand up to what is expected to be a majority, Democrat majority in the Assembly and in the Senate? And we know, as we saw 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, that we are going to have legislation passed by those bodies that would make us a sanctuary state, that would put curbs on our guns, that will raise taxes, property taxes included, that are going to funnel money to unfunded mandates into our school systems, and go after Second Amendment rights. I think I said that one. But then most importantly, positioning for 2020 when redistricting happens. And we could see the nature of this state change completely. And the question would be, pro-business, questionably, but will a Democrat governor go against the wishes of the Assembly and the Senate to veto those bills, or are we going to all of a sudden become California East?
Well, and that's scary, especially at a time when there's talk about California trying to break themselves apart, because not even all Californians like what's going on over there. But,
right.
You know, I echo what you say. I don't think that it's an alarmist attitude that you present this with. There's some pretty big fears, and I hope that the folks all across rural Nevada and those folks down in the South who cherish our freedoms, cherish our constitutional rights, we'll pay attention during this. My big hope is that whatever comes out of this, I hope that everybody in our great state will look at the nonsense being slung in the governor's race. And at the national level, it's being thrown around there, too. You know, and I hope that I'm going to give a little plug out to Story County residents. You know, our folks saw the nonsense 4 years ago. They saw it last year during the recall. They saw it this year. And it's many of these same people are involved in all of this stuff. Our folks had the common sense and the wherewithal to see through the nonsense. I hope that people all across our state will have that same ability and will do what's right come election time. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, we
have to continue this conversation. Right?
We will definitely pick it up again at a future point. I have no doubt about that. But before we go, I need to throw out a word about the Canvas Cafe. I know that Nicole touched on that. They are located at 110 North C Street in historic Virginia City. Good food, good friends, and good times are waiting for you there. Tell Richard and Alexia that the sheriff sent you. Now, there are no major events on the calendar for the rest of July in Virginia City, but there is always something going on up there. I know St. Mary's Art Center is having an exhibition during the month. There's some musical numbers that are going on. There's the local car club is doing a show. And, of course, there's always lots of good things to see and do. Any day on the Comstock is a good day. So I want to thank our guests today for being with us. I want to thank you listeners for spending your time with us. Thank you, Craig, for making it all go together behind the scenes. And until next time, be safe and God bless.